will start off with, of course, Sunday mornings. We're still in the summer session as far as that's concerned, and for the month of September, we will be continuing with Mr. Crosby. So that on Sundays, the doors open at 10:30, class is from 11 to 12 noon, and our next one and our last one will be on the 25th of September, and we're doing Robert Crosby's Letters That Have Helped Me, and it will be on the nature of chalaship. Then on Wednesday night, still in our summer session, we're dealing with the Bhagavad Gita, and again, we start at 7:15 and it runs to 8. From 7:30 to 8:30, sorry about that. And also on Wednesday night, the library is open in the front of the building from 5:15 to 7:15, where we can come in and either get a reference or read up on the class that's coming up. This coming Wednesday, we'll be doing the second half of the 18th chapter, which is the last chapter in the book. And then the following Wednesday, we will be doing a wrap-up or a review of the whole Gita. Also, we wanted to remind you about Wednesday nights. For those who have cars and come in to park in front, starting with October, there will be a fee. There's no free parking anymore. So you'll have to check and find out if it's 2 hours to park, and if you park there, you're going to have to pay. Otherwise, they'll ticket you. So that takes care of the two sessions that we have, that of Wednesday nights and Sundays. Now for the declaration. It's short and to the point, but it has a lot in it. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. That work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. And that work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is that similarity of aim, purpose, and teachings, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach. teach others. So today, we are starting off with the subject matter of the right use of faculties. This we will have read by a student, and then afterwards there will be time for questions, comments, and answers, hopefully.
Well, that was a Freudian slip. It won't be read by a student, it'll be summarized. But goodness only knows that the entire article is chock full of really, really good things. We know from the beginning of the article that we've shared that the faculties referred to are those of the mind. And right off the bat, the article is talking about the fact that daily, as soul, we move through a series of planes, that the brain and the lower planes can become very, very contorting or limiting, if you will, and that the right action, the right use of those faculties of mind is that a disciple will focus on the fundamentals, make the attempt to apply them at whatever plane is presented as experience, and do duty that comes to the disciple for the sheer sake of doing duty well. And that by inches, therefore, mind, will is freed up of these lower plane influences. The second major point in the article has to do with memory, and memory is a faculty of perceiving, registering, quote, reality, if you will, and that we are told that physical memory can definitely be trained to greater effectiveness. And what Mr. Crosby is talking about is moving through life as a mind being, perceiving the experiences, and then like a cultural anthropologist, making note of the causes, the experience, the effects, and making note in a very impersonal way, the goal being to learn to help others. And therefore, the attitude is one of being non-judgmental and being observant both within and without at all times as much as possible. A third point made by the article is that the faculties of mind best used or used rightly are focusing in the moment. Memory is itself a particular attribute that can be used for positive or negative experience. But the article says that a student or a disciple should dwell on the fact of the higher self, mind, the perceiver, the eternal being, day in and day out as best as can be, until the will and desire naturally incline toward it as the subtone or the aim of thought. And we are advised that gradually by turning our focus to the higher, to the fundamentals of life, to the masters that have gone before, the influences of the lower planes will gradually disappear or dissipate in terms of power and confusion, and ultimately we will be on the road to the Mahatmas, to the masters, to the adepts. Another point made is that while we're focusing the use of mental faculties in the moment, it is the motivation, the renunciation, if you will, that is so, so important. That doing our duty the best we can within the confines of karma, we let go of the results. That the renunciation of self-interest in the fruits of actions are very, very important. And that by inches, bit by bit by bit, there's a natural blooming of the internal, eternal, outward. is also stated that there is, we have to recognize that there's hidden spiritual growth, that we as mind building beings are still moving through karmic effects, cycles, if you will, flow of cause and effect, and that very possibly the perception may be that the higher our ideals, the more we try, it might seem that karma's coming at us in a crazy fashion, presenting more and more tests of endurance, if you will. And that may very well be, because we're reminded that as we begin to use these faculties of higher mind, as we begin to hold the motive and focus of spiritual growth to help others, our perception changes, the bar changes. And so it may seem that there's more imperfection in the lower planes, when in reality, what's being experienced is more awareness from the higher point of view. And so the article ends with a statement or two about the nature of the perceiver, and we're reminded that the true perceiver is changeless, that mind and even lower mind and the brain are merely tools for the faculties of that eternal perceiver to comprehend things and natures on this plane, and that if we wanted to use an analogy, it would be that mind might be likened to a telescope used by man the perceiver in order to gain experience and make observations about the world around. And like any good telescope, it needs to be focused. It needs to be scientifically, objectively brought into use and focused so that learning can be achieved.
So we have, it's an interesting subject when you look at it that way, this idea that it is a power of the mind. It's just like the reasoning that we use, the memory in our speech. It's something that for most of us we don't even question. We just go from day to day and walk through it. And to know that there is an inherent capacity within us, a possibility that we can tap on and use, it's already in us from birth to birth. So we can use that as a thing of stopping off, we might. It's interesting that it's that particular idea, that particular ability that we use in all our actions, and a lot of times we just never question it. So we will open up the subject matter for questions or comments. We like the idea of that idea of memory, and we do it all the time. Someone says, what time is it? You look at your watch or your phone, and you tell them. A few minutes later, somebody comes up and asks you, and it's like, you have to look at your watch again? And it's as it's stated in here. It's the object was to see what time it wasn't, that it's moved. But there's so many things that we just do automatically and we never question, now why did I do that? Yes.
In the very first line, Crosby says, you have it right about passing from plane to plane daily, but relating everything to the brain cycle of necessity and thus losing the meanings. That brain circle of necessity. What's he referring to?
well, this something again has something to do with that. The idea that we, the brain is an instrument that's used by that eternal thinker within. So the idea is, it's our understanding was the idea of we do stuff in a certain way in our daily thing as routine that is built up that we never really question. Why am I doing it? Do you have any aspects that you could think of? Yoko, the one that asked the question. That is a cycle because we all can acknowledge that we do sleep and we do have a waking time. We cannot exactly acknowledge most of the time when we actually went from the waking to the sleeping. It's like a never-ending cycle. We go through it. We just don't have to plan on it, because there's many of times people have gone to bed to quote go to sleep, but the brain is so busy going over the memory of things that came through, things we imagine, things we have to do. We're so busy we can't even quiet the instrument. It just routinely has to wear itself out. Yes.
Many people who say that the majority of humanity is constantly asleep. That we, you know, as a matter of fact, they refer to the Buddha as the awakened one. Which, what does that mean for the rest of us? So this idea of the circle is that perhaps the circle isn't as plain as we think it is. Perhaps we do too many things and a remote fashion without thinking about what we're doing. We're not really aware of what we're doing. We are in a sort of a haze.
Right. And a lot of that is out of habit. Habit of what we've done before, yes.
Well, habit is also an idea that came to mind in that here at the lodge, we try to be extremely punctual. Meetings start on the minute. They end on the minute. And perhaps what we're doing collectively is training the brain to function at particular times in a particular way. So there's a habit of spiritual thought. And maybe that's why folks meditate at the same time as well.
Yes, because that is the system. Eventually, if we stick to a certain schedule, it will become, quote, routine, automatic. We won't have to think about it. It'll just be, this is the time for the mode for whatever it is. And especially with meditation, it is important because it's like this personality learns how to quiet down. So we can enter that state of meditation. Yes.
I guess in the book, I guess it's the bottom of page 142 to 143. He who seeth that all his actions are performed by nature only, and that the self within is not the actor, sees indeed. But aren't we trying to be motivated by the higher self rather than the lower? So this just kind of confused us because actions are performed by nature only. Nature, we were thinking the lower nature. But we were under the impression that we want to be
is in connection, okay.
Yes, it is the study of the Gita itself, that
Right.
the actor is not the thinker. The thinker wills the action, but the action is carried out by nature. And if you stop and think about it, even a mundane thing like making your breakfast, your mind can be a million miles away. You have already trained the nature of your body and your senses, and they're doing the work. So the actions take place through nature. The impulse comes from the thinker.
Right.
But we wanted to go back to the original question about passing from plane to plane, but relating everything to the brain circle of necessity. An example is, you might be doing something like the dishes, and you have an intuition. But instead of putting that intuition aside and going, I am going to look at this from the highest I can, we relate it to our everyday life. We don't consider for a moment that we actually have a higher spiritual life.
And most of the time, we're not really living it the way we should be living it. We're living it by outside effects. How many, as you get older, take for instance that idea of getting up in the morning and making breakfast, and you open the refrigerator and you look, and it's like, what did I come in here for? Let me see, eggs, I want to make eggs, so you need the eggs, you need the milk. And it's like, if automatically, if we would have been in a different state completely, we would have known to open up and take what we need because we've been doing it for so long. Most people do it routinely. They have the same items that they eat every morning. So you sort of wonder, who is in charge here? And a lot of, as we say, a lot of things that we carry around as our knowledge of stuff is really not ours. It's either something we picked up from someone or someone we read, somewhere we read it. It's not really ours. We have abilities to have within us the knowledge that we can express, the habits that we have. We created them. We can change them, but it takes time. It's like the needle in an old record falling in that groove and hits a piece of dust and it jumps. We have to recycle, for those of you who might not know, those plastic things that we called records back then. That's how it worked. You wanted to hear a record, you put it on, and hopefully you kept it clean so it isn't going to hit any grooves and bounce around. Yes. Right. And as we talked about, like, these are powers of the mind, shall we say, these faculties. And for most of us, if you think about it, the reasoning is a faculty. Our memory that we have, in a way, is something that's used. Accumulated memory, shall we say. And then, of course, the faculty being able to express an idea in your mind verbally through speech to another. This is something one has to work on. And we know this is with children. When very beginning, before they even go to school, they are imitating what they're seeing or hearing around them from their parents, from their caregivers. And that's, in a way, how they learn. The same thing with walking, crawling, walking, riding a bicycle. It's something they have to apply to. Yes.
Well, it's interesting that
Yes, it is, and we wanted to understand this idea of it's the divine spirit in man. It's that independent existence. We need to tap on it. We have a lot of past knowledge that we've learned, but we have covered it up by so much from the outside that we don't understand this idea maybe of looking within, thou art Buddha, looking within in anything we do. It's become a routine and it's all coming from the external. That's not the real. There is that real within us. It's been there, it always will be. Yes. Or we overly pay attention. We think the best idea is that idea of a habit that we've got, whether for most they're negative, they're not good habits, but we do have some good habits. Do we not think how long it is that we have to work to break a habit? And it's a constant thing and it takes time. Well, it had to take time for it to develop within us. But once we get the idea that I'm in control, not these outer things that I'm doing, then we have to start really working on it. And for some of us, it takes a long time to break a habit that we want to get rid of. And it also takes us a long time to develop a good habit that we want to have. And that might be the steps of going from an everyday world to stopping and having that time of going within, that meditation time. For some at the very beginning, you can't even hold your mind on one thought, one idea. You're lucky if you can get it past 5 minutes. Others have developed it enough and have brought it through in this lifetime so it can go through the physical vehicle that it has to go through, but it's in control where they know it's my time of meditation. They go into it very easily. Others, they have to work on it. It's a remembering of the knowledge we already have. Yes. That is a very good point. The idea of take the time to really study and question. Most of us, we're working on automatic pilot. It's like, boom, it's just an automatic thing. And it's when one gets into that meditation mode, it's a different way of looking at stuff. It's a different way of thinking about something. It's a quieting, and yet it has a lot of depth to it. We just don't pay attention. That's the truth. We just sort of roll with the punches and never go, why am I doing this like this? Yes. We speak about the three qualities, and the fact of the matter is they can be mixed. There can be heavy into one, more into the other, but the fact, it's a routine type of thing in a way by now, that if we look at those three qualities, that sattva quality, versus that, and then the raja quality, and then the versus down to the tamas quality. If we really start to think about it, and a great, those might be a great subject to think about in a meditation mode, to figure out so that we could know within the time limit in a day what part of my nature is working in what area of this quality.
But if one already knows what quality is uppermost within him, isn't that something that could be used during the day when you have a thought and you can examine where it comes from? Would that be a great help?
Yes. For that individual who can know what quality he's expressing and putting out, it would be interesting to see what the situation would come forth for one who doesn't know what quality. And one, as the studies from the Gita, when you study those qualities, we can just think on a 24-hour day, there is a mixture. It's never solid of only one thing. It's a mixture. But the fact that if we can catch when we're going in an area that we don't want to go in, whether it be rajas, be too far, getting into the act, and doing it, not really thinking about how we're going to do it, just doing it, versus, for instance, the tamas quality, where they just sort of lay back and they might not affect it at all and never question it. And that sattva quality, and in those three of all, that is the quality that we could say one is more fully expressing, because it knows enough to, I need to find balance, I need to find harmony. I can't be like this and like this all day long. I need to find that middle path.
And on any day, or even any hour, isn't it true that one quality can be more dominant than the other? And there was a quotation, we can't remember the whole thing, about an examined life. And you know that it's important to examine one's life. So we wonder in regards to the qualities then, if we realize that, you know, maybe I'm not acting, you know, in the best of moods right now, that being aware of these things, can really help somebody to like pull back, detach, and maybe change their attitude towards things. And if maybe doing this on a more regular basis by being able to examine your life and knowing about the qualities, we can change our whole life. And we're talking about, you know, the spirit being the impetus behind our actions, then we can be more open, we guess, to a spiritual movement.
Yes, and that idea of being open to a spiritual movement, how about the idea of just quieting everything? In today's world, with all the technology that we have, that people wake up in the morning and the first thing they do is check that phone. Or you go into a movie theater and prior to the movie on, all of a sudden if you just sit back and you see all these lights that are on. I mean, is there any time when we're a little quiet and we're not constantly looking? Whatever happened to thinking? We just don't do that much. It's just automatically that thumb's going boom, 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 boom. And we really feel that technology will have its time too. It's going to run its muck. It will. It's got to back up. If you go back to quieter times, long times before, people who lived by the nature of laws, the early people, pioneers, that knew that when it started to get dusk, they went to sleep. And they had a good night's sleep because they had put in probably a hard physical day anyhow, just working a farm, for instance. But there wasn't all these interruptions and interferences going on. And you just, things were more routinely done. And we don't know if they were questioned or not, but out of habit, it was a much more calmer, quieter life. They ate well they could eat with what they could afford. They worked well. They gave a good hard day's work. For most of us, everything's so much easier. Just push a button, click a number. It will have its time where it's, as you know, the old idea, this is what the world's like. And it's really got to swing way up and way out before it starts doing this. And the circle gets smaller, and all of a sudden, there will be a time when there's no swinging. That's the middle path. That's the middle path that can see this going up and this going up. For most of us, we just move with the times from outside effects.
But with the younger generation being so stimulated that they can't ride for half an hour in a car without watching a movie, that technology desire is not going to die. It'll have to be electricity that dies, or the whole satellite system dies. But the earlier comment, it was Socrates who said, the unexamined life is not worth living.
Mm.
And in this, on page 2, the bottom paragraph, or paragraph 5, if you have the book, it is well to have recognized the hidden activity of your aspiration manifests in the increased activity of the lower nature. So it couldn't be more important, once you start studying these ideas, to be aware of what's happening in your own lower nature, and not going, oh, that's me, oh, that's terrible, but it's more like, oh, that's a problem I haven't fixed yet, so I better examine it and get on it and start working on it. If you realize it comes from the better part of your nature, it's like exposing something to you. Look, this is in you. Cure it.
That is a situation that I think part of it for most of us is learning not to be attached to things or different ways and modes. We just get attached to them, and we're not the observer that we really are. There is a part of our nature that is observing constantly everything we do and think and act. And sometimes one wonders, for the great teachers that have been on this earth that we know of, that we have read about, how you think about when it says, I, Buddha, who wept with all my brothers, seeing what we're going through as a, quote, human beings. They had to have a lot of love and patience and knowing. And of course, at that point, these great masters, these great adepts, have learned who is in control in any one lifetime. For most of us, we have yet to reach that, quote, on a 24 basis. Way in the back.
Well, on the second page, I guess.
Yeah.
Where it's page, it does require an immortal courage to have an immortal point of view. And to hold to it while watching and guiding the lower forces in unity, but start the law. Well, we heard one time, every failure is success.
If you learn from it.
If what happens is a failure, the success
if you've learned something from it that you can acknowledge.
But it tells you right there, further down, the only way he says here
is
renunciation of self-interest, indifference of action, may not be ours now, but growth in that direction is possible, and all growth makes for better attainment. So, if most people, when they fail, they whip themselves, don't stop to think, what is nature trying to tell me?
That I aha moment has not hit yet.
It may not be a mistake. Nature's trying to tell us that that's a point that you have to be paying attention to. And renunciation of the fruits begins, but it still can be very painful. And that way we know that the personality is in combat.
Oh, definitely. Indefinitely, yes, you had a point.
I was just listening and noticing that how you were saying out of cell phones and, you know, nature, and all of us, most folks these days are far from nature and be caught up into, because we're multi-dimensional beings in the sense that we're on multiple planes, the soul goes through multiple planes. But for the depth, he's on the more of the mental plane, and most people are stuck on the physical plane. So because they're stuck on the physical plane, they only go by the senses. And we're always looking at the phone because we into the senses, which is just a setup, because they call it cell phone, and it's just one part of us. And because they focus and we're so distracted by that, well, most people are distracted by that, because at this point, we are all here, so we're trying to get to the higher. So it's like, in these days and times, disastrous. Because
it's what?
It's a disaster because most people are poor. I mean, it's like, you know what, not disaster, but we're in darkness.
Oh, yes. This is the dark age, the iron age. But this age that we're in, which technology is quite obvious, is one of the, shall we say, shortest. So, and it's fast moving. The fact is, we could take our energy and gain a lot more and regain a lot of knowledge within, with the fact that it's a quick moving age. It's not the golden age, it's not the silver age, it's not the bronze age, it's the iron age. But it's the age that we could do the most to. We have to get to the point where we need to know who's in charge. And for most of it, it's our personal faculties, our costume that we are wearing in this lifetime. And we developed it and built it and given it all its life, and it's in charge. It's also like, you know, someone in the horse and the rider. Who's in charge here? Is the rider in charge of the situation? Is he getting the horse to take him where he wants to go? Or is this a wild horse that we're just hanging on for life that we don't fall off? Yep.
But we are always in charge. Even if the horse is running the show, it can't work without our permission. So we have to realize that. Even when we're doing something stupid, we're allowing it to happen. Back to the failure and success point, we think Thomas Edison said it best. An interviewer said to him, wasn't it awful and frustrating that you took 90 tries to make the light bulb work? And he said, and maybe that's the wrong number, and he said, no, I learned 89 ways not to do it. So if we would take failure as a step on the road to success, we'd do a lot better.
Very much so, it would seem. It's an interesting subject. It's almost like a dissecting to just sort of figure out, who am I and where am I going? been. We relied too much on outside information. We, you know, it is only during that quiet period that we can gain any knowledge of the knowledge we already know. It's a very hectic time. It's stronger, but it, if we look at the idea of karma, if we didn't have the strength within us, we couldn't exist. There are those who give up, and it's like they're just giving up from the personal information. Take, for instance, a suicide. It's like, how many times in a way have we suicide any lifetime that we've been in that we could stand today and look and see what comes to us? And that's a real good point. Things that come directly to us, not from the sidelines, not being pushed by somebody else, but comes directly to us. It's something we know. I have to make a decision on this. I have to move on this. These are the ports of growth. Those are space and growth. Yes.
Regarding karma, this is just a little aside.
Okay.
there was a TV show on this morning, and it's a, like a different articles, different topics, and they were interviewing people about luck, what their conception of luck is, and oh, isn't he a lucky person, and wasn't that luck that such and such happened or not, and we were sitting there watching it and thinking, wow, you know, we never actually thought that the idea of karma, you know, people are, well, karma is more in the vernacular today, we think, than it ever was.
Yeah.
But
loosely,
people are still looking at it as being lucky, whereas, no, it, you know, it's what was just said. It's what came to them through karma. But we just thought it was kind of an interesting perspective on what karma actually is, that people are looking at it as being lucky.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yes.
There used to be an old introduction for people in show business, and they'd say, well, after 30 years, he became an overnight sensation. So that's luck. You planted this, and you planted a corn, and it came up, and you were lucky.
That's it. Just way in the back.
This is such an interesting article in that all of this discussion has been about the eternal pilgrim and individual efforts. But the article also has a quote from the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. A truer realization of the self, Dr. Seaver, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. And so it's not just an independent island of an individual effort, is it?
No.
There's something universal about that perceiver.
And that is part of the teachings, the idea. This is, in fact, universal brotherhood does exist. And the fact that no matter where one's, it's like, you know, you look at this idea of a mother and a child. Well, no matter where you are in the world, whether it's what they would call a prominent area and an area that is desolute, there is that same mother that's in one has the same ability to cry or hope for that child as the one who is in a very advantaged type area. If that ability is in there, and it states, we all have the same powers. We're all at different times of development, and redeveloping, so that we can only express what we can at any one time. But the idea of taking these, quote, faculties and making them in the term that we can express, when we say we, this higher nature can use these faculties on a different level than for most of us use our faculties on an everyday existence.
We think a good analogy for trying to recognize that sameness, that spiritual basis in others, is the analogy of we are all a ray of light from the same source, but we're falling on different things. So that ray of light in a polished diamond is brilliant, but falling on a lump of coal, you don't see it. But the lump of coal is the potential diamond, and it's the individual thinker has to cut and polish that coal to make it the diamond. So we think that's a way of recognizing, I don't see this in others or all others, but I know it's there.
We all have the same abilities. The expression of joy, the expression of sorrow, we all have it, no matter where we are, who we are. It's a universal feeling of giving. Of, it's like for here in America, we need a catastrophe and people just pull together. There's so much going on in the news today about accidents and things and how people just don't even think. They're running to help and they're doing it. And it's like there was periods of times when that was really sort of standoffish and you backed away from it. Not today. People, younger people, especially a lot of things that are coming from children that are developing at this period of time and coming forth, they're starting things that really, it's amazing of what they're doing as far as doing work that is a united for all humanity. The children are starting this and we look in awe. These are old souls that are coming back that know that we're our unity. And we got to learn how to live as a unity all the time. And for most, we don't, yes.
Well, we've heard the terms meditate and fight.
Meditate and what?
Meditate and fight.
Fight.
And on the last page, that third page is, whenever man relies upon to that he goes.
Yes.
And he only who relies upon himself is not subject to rebirth. Well, when we think of fight, we think of aggressiveness. Is that a right attitude, being aggressive?
Not necessarily. What do you think the Gita's about? What is Krishna trying to explain to Arjuna? You are born a born warrior. You have to do it. It's part of your nature. So it's a warrior, depending on what type of a war we're talking about. But the fact of the matter is, each one comes into a lifetime with his little baggage of karma, and it's his own creation. We pack that suitcase. Now we have to open it and go through the articles that are there. Well, in that way, you are a warrior. In that extent, too. Way in the back.
It takes discipline. The struggle is within to remain that neutral observer who's noting without judgment,
right,
making the effort to figure out where's the pattern, what's this experience. And in that way, the aggression is stamina and holding a one-pointedness in a fight to raise all of manifestation.
And our time is approaching. So we have, it looks like we have room for maybe one comment or one, yes.
When the fellow tested the atomic bomb and he saw and heard the result, he said, he felt very humble, and he said, "Behold, I am Shiva, destroyer and regenerator." So if anyone feels as though they don't have any ammunition, stop at the book table. It's loaded.
So we stand it that way, and hopefully we'll see you next Sunday.
Oh, this side, wait.